Ready for the show? I'm ready to start.
10, 9, ignition sequence starts. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Liftoff on Apollo 11. Tower clear.
Roger.
Welcome to ET First Contact Radio. I'm your host as usual. My name is Maarten Horst and we have a very exciting show today with my guest Jeffrey Becker. And I will just introduce Jeffrey. He just wrote a book. It just came out in December 2012, Paths to Contact, True Stories from the Contact Underground. And Jeffrey Becker is a computer programmer who in 2008 decided to see for himself if the extraterrestrial presence was real. The experiences leading up to that decision and those that followed were life-changing. After attending CSETI Ambassador to the Universe training in the fall of 2008, the ETs followed him home. He organized a local contact group and has been having regular contact ever since. His story is just one chapter in this book. His experiences are far from unique. Paths to Contact, True Stories from the Contact Underground, is about people like him, ordinary people, having extraordinary experiences. These peoples are doctors, computer programmers, sanitation and postal workers, healers, meteorologists, biologists, pilots, artists, engineers, people from many different walks of life. They have each volunteered to tell their story of extraterrestrial contact and how it has affected their life. When Jeffrey Becker pardon me, floated the idea of his book project in December of 2011, the response from so many people eager to tell their stories convinced him that the project would be a success. This has been a team effort, with most people doing their work, own writing and telling their story in their own words. These are stories of amazing sightings, personal transformations and even healings. Most of these stories involve human initiated contact. That's right, these are people who go out under the stars and ask for contact. And it happens with amazing reliability when done correctly. Perhaps these stories will inspire you to embark on your own path to contact. Well, this is not a how-to book. Numerous resources are referenced in the book and even can be more found on the book website. For more information about this ongoing project, see www.paths2contact.org. So, Jeffrey, congratulations with your new book and welcome to the show.
Oh, well, thank you, Martin, and thank you for having me on the show again. It's nice talking to you.
It is.
And thank you for that lovely introduction.
Yes, yes. You have written a wonderful book together with the other witnesses of contact. And there are, in fact, many of them. I can give some names. Jeffrey Becker, Brennan, Brooke, Burks, Butterfast, and many others. And you have written your own chapter in the book, which I liked very much. And I just want to ask. Yeah.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, you have had quite an outstanding career as a computer programmer, and you have been raised as a atheist or agnostic, and through the years you have been interested in UFOs and extraterrestrials, and it has come back and gone in the past. But since 2008, events happened in your life that really made you interested and believe and testify. And that's why we have you on the show, to explain the importance of witnessing the contact with craft and ETs. So how's it going right now?
It's going really well. I think I'd like to start by saying there's, besides the 22 people in this book, there's lots and lots and lots of people that could have written chapters like this. It's just, these happen to be people that I knew or got in touch with through people I knew. So it's a very small sample of everyone that's doing this sort of thing, but I think it's a very nice sample. I think the chapters work together really well. But there's a fellow, Costa McCreese, who's running something called the Global CE5 Initiative, and he has and actually his story is one of the chapters in the book. It's the last chapter, and he talks about how he came to start the Global CE5 Initiative, and some of his contact experiences, which are extraordinary. But he's been running this global network of people that every month go out and try to make contact, and then they report their experiences. And also, the group is open. Anybody can join this, even if they just want to keep track of what other people are doing. But also, on his website, he has a way for people to find active groups and get in touch with them and join them in the field. So, he's just set up a new website. It's etletstalk.org. And if you can't find that directly, you can go to the book website, pasttocontact.org, and there's a reference in the resources section there.
Yes, and CE5 is Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind. A close encounter of the fifth kind, or CE5, is characterized by human-initiated and or voluntary human interactive encounters with extraterrestrial spacecraft and their occupants. The term CE5 was coined by Dr. Stephen M. Greer.
That's right.
I must tell you and tell the listeners that the glossary in this book that you wrote is very helpful, especially for beginners who study the UFO field. There are many explanations, and they are very accurate. So that's just part of the book that I like very much.
Yeah, we've kind of developed a little bit of terminology in this field, and so I thought it was a good idea to let people know what some of those terms mean. It's like anything where you develop shorthands for different sorts of phenomena and other things like CE5. But there's also people that go out in the field tend to see similar sorts of phenomena, and so there are names for those, like flash bulbs and fast walkers and streaks and things like that.
Yes. Jeffrey, I don't know if you have picked it up in the news on the internet, but I think 2 days ago, Dr. Stephen Greer initiated, from the DisclosureProject.org, initiated a new project to make a citizen hearing on disclosure.
I thought that was Stephen Bassett.
It's Stephen Bassett, indeed.
Yeah, okay.
Nevertheless, it's a very good initiative, of course.
Oh, yeah, it looks excellent. I'm really looking forward to seeing what comes out of that.
Yeah. So, disclosure, of course, is the most important single event in our history when it happens. It's not a question if it will happen, but when it will happen. And when this happens, we had last year some key dates that many people were expecting spacecraft to appear massively, especially on December the 21st. But it didn't happen. But nevertheless, I'm still hopeful. And do you think that there will be some interference from the ETs to force disclosure?
I don't think that's the way they do things, just from what a lot of people say and my own impression, that there seems to be a great deal of respect for free will. I can't confirm this. I don't have any personal information on this, but some people are saying that when a certain number of certain percentage of the people on Earth are ready, then they may do something a little more overt. Until then, it's these contact groups, which are growing rapidly, by the way, who are getting everybody ready. So,
yeah. Because that's what I mean. You know, the population, the regular people, I think most of us want contact, and they want to see our brethren from the skies. But we have to acknowledge that our government, especially from Western countries, are covering the truth up, and also the media is controlled, the mainstream media. So at some point, I think, as you say, as a certain percentage is reached, something might happen, because they have the technology to take over our satellites and cable networks.
Oh, sure, and it's... It's one of these things that has come up again and again when I talk to people, is a dream where, you know, I've had this dream, and it seems like every time I ask the question, somebody else tells me they've had this dream where the sky is full of spaceships. And to me, that seems like something that's going to happen. There's just so many people have seen it. It's just, I have to think that it's very important, the fact that all these people are having this dream. So,
yes, I read
yeah.
the dream you're speaking about with the sky full of spacecraft. I just read it in your book, and I have had a similar dream like that as well. And I also spoke to many people who also had a similar dream. So that's very interesting what you're saying. And I was finding so much, how can I put it into the right words, so much confirmation, so much happiness when I was reading that in your chapter about that dream.
Yeah.
And I'm very happy you shared it in your book because I think it's important.
Yeah, I think it's also important that people share these things with each other. So there are a number of reasons that I wanted to write this book. One is to sort of break the ice, to let people know that it's okay to tell your stories. Because a lot of people, it seems to me, I've met a lot of people that have seen a UFO, or they know somebody who's seen a UFO, or their child has seen a UFO, and in a very, very unmistakable way. There's no doubt in their mind, but they don't want to talk about it because of the culture that's in place right now. It tends to not take that sort of thing seriously, and that's a real problem. People don't want to talk if they're afraid they're going to be laughed at. So part of the reason I wrote this book is to try and change that, to make this something that people feel they can talk about, because there are other people standing up and saying, yeah, that's real. And nobody should be ashamed to talk about something they've seen and have no doubt about. It's not right. So, and things like this dream, I think, yeah, it's something people should get with people they feel comfortable with, and talk about that sort of thing, and talk about things they've seen and other extraordinary experiences that might have happened to them.
Mm-hmm. And what I also find very promising, Jeffrey, is because of your scientific background and your higher education and experience in the Navy, that makes the book more credible, you know, because you have a logical mind, you have been in computer programming for many years, and those people are people that are highly regarded in the scientific field. So I think just the fact that this book came from your hand and other writers and other witnesses, of course, that's very promising for people that might be skeptic, you know?
Yeah, and people that are skeptical, we're not trying to really prove anything with this book. It's more to just provide personal points of view on these very extraordinary experiences. And what I hope is that people will find enough to go on there to take the next step and see for themselves. This isn't the sort of thing that you can prove with words. There's been endless books written on this subject. I have shelves full of books on this subject. It still doesn't prove that the phenomenon is real. When you see it, then you know it's real, and nobody can tell you otherwise. And that really sort of does away with anybody arguing with you. I mean, you know. So.
Yeah. Have the courage to say, you know, have the courage to face the truth. Do the right thing because it's right. These are the magic keys to living your life with integrity. W. Clement Stone. And that's a quote that you wrote in your book, just after your chapter. Can you tell me, or the listeners, who this person was?
No, I don't really know. I just like the quote.
Okay, well, don't shoot the messenger. The truth in this saying is more important than from who it came. And that's the whole thing with the UFO disclosure and witnesses. There are now so many people telling the story that it's not possible anymore to shoot the messenger, because, of course, I'm doing this program, ET First Contact Radio, and there are more radio programs on the internet coming, and they're growing like mushrooms in a forest, you know, and websites about disclosure and books that are written. So I think it will be difficult to hide the truth much longer.
Yeah, and the book is called Past the Contact, True Stories from the Contact Underground. And, you know, we're still kind of underground. Shows like this are not mainstream yet. It'll be nice when we can talk about this sort of thing on a mainstream network, but I don't see that happening real soon. But the notion of Contact Underground, that, in fact, that term came from Dr. Joseph Birks, who wrote the first chapter in the book. He set up one of the first Sea City working groups that was in the Los Angeles area, and that was many years ago. But the notion of Contact Underground was that people are doing this contact work, but the news about it's not really getting out. And it's like other underground movements, it's sort of countercultural or even revolutionary in that the things they're doing can promote great change in the world.
Yes.
And I certainly don't mean revolutionary in any sort of violent sense, but more in a changing your outlook, changing the way you think about things. It's a revolution of ideas. Because once you know that we're not alone, the other implications are so enormous, it really gets overwhelming. It goes way, way, way beyond just people traveling from other planets in spaceships. There's so much more to it. It's just astounding. So really, it's about personal growth. It's about, in fact, spiritual growth. Like you said, I came from an atheist background. I'll say atheist, not agnostic, because I was pretty seriously not believing in God. In fact, disbelieving. So that's a kind of a huge change, but it's based on things I learned in the process of studying the UFO phenomenon.
Yeah, what's interesting to see that I have the same experience with all the groups that exist in the Netherlands, for example, or in England, where I go every summer to witness the crop circles being made. When you go into ET UFO research groups, you quickly come to the conclusion that it's all about spiritual growth.
Yes, exactly. And that really wasn't anything I expected. It just sort of hit me very hard and changed my life quite a lot. And other people are coming from similar backgrounds. They say similar things. And there are some of those in other chapters in the book. People are coming from a very scientific background, and then they end up discovering that the limits science imposes on your worldview by saying certain things aren't possible, those limits don't exist. They aren't real. They're based on a belief that what science explains is all that there is.
And yeah, that's dogmas, like you explained in your book, like dogmas in religion.
Yeah.
Jeffrey, can you share your experience when after you attended the course and the in the field with Dr. Stephen Greer, that when you went back home, you were followed by a craft?
I wasn't followed by a craft so much as I was maintaining my thoughts on the ETs. We were told that there would be contacts assigned, ET contact assigned to us. And so I kept that contact in my thoughts all the way home. And I was very serious about it. And I asked for some sort of manifestation. And actually was... And something happened, which I'll describe. But the second night after I got home, I went on the back porch, and we had been seeing all week at the training these very sparkly meteors that looked like no meteors I've ever seen before. They're very slow moving and gave off showers of sparks. And when I got home, there was another one of those up in the sky for me when I stepped on the back porch. But then... I asked for some other sort of manifestation I didn't specify at all. And this is peculiar in that, I don't know, it's, you never know what's going to happen or how it's going to happen or what it means. And so you have to be kind of open-minded. But what happened was the smoke alarm in the hallway outside my wife's office started going off randomly. And it was beeping. So normally when there's smoke, it'll beep three times. And so it'll go beep, 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 and then quiet, and then beep, 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 and then quiet, beep, 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 and pause. And, you know, we've heard it a lot because, you know, you cook a chicken or something in the oven and the smoke gets out and then the smoke alarms go off. but this, it wasn't doing that. It was doing these random things. And so I took it off the ceiling and looked at it for a while thinking, huh, I wonder if it's broke or what, and took the battery out because the things are kind of loud. And I got to thinking about it and I thought, well, I wonder if that was the manifestation I asked for. So the next morning I put the smoke alarm on my desk, put the battery back in, and around noon it started going off again in the same random sort of way. And I started writing down ones and twos and threes and twos and ones, and there didn't seem to be any message there. It was just random. And so I went very quickly into a meditative state, and I thought, okay, thanks guys, I get it, but it's just too loud. And almost before I even finished thinking it, it went silent.
Yeah.
And stayed silent.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, I read it in your chapter.
Yeah, and that was one of a number of times I've had very good confirmation of telepathic interaction.
Yes.
And coming from the background I come from, which is scientific, mechanistic, if you don't know the mechanism for it, then it doesn't exist. The notion of telepathy was not part of that. And so having real evidence that this is real kind of, you know, my worldview was already shaken up. But this sort of like nailed the lid on it. Oh, let's see.
Grant Haygood.
Grant Haygood.
Yeah, I like it very much because he's a young fellow. And, I am not so young anymore. I mean, I'm 26 years old, but...
you're a youngster. I'm 57.
But, I mean, he is even younger. And I was just wondering, how did you come in contact with him? And how did you get his story in your book?
Well, Grant has actually set up a couple of Facebook pages. He's admins on a couple of Facebook pages. And one is the CE5 initiative page. It's a closed page, but it's pretty easy to get an invitation to it if you have a positive outlook on ET contact. And he's also done one called ECO, the ET Contact Organization. And I sort of ran into him on Facebook and through these web pages and learned about his story. And it was also on those groups that I started looking for people to share their story in the book. And so we had been in touch and I talked to him and learned about some of what had happened to him. And he decided to share his story, which is kind of interesting because he hasn't been to any sort of training. He just one day decided he was going to ask with all his heart to see something. And very shortly thereafter, he saw a silver, a liquid mercury silver orb in the daytime.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, by reading the book and the different chapters, I must say to the listeners, Path to Contact is worth reading. It's a hopeful message, and I hope it will help if you are listening and you have your own ET experiences. Don't be afraid to talk about it, and you can be a guest on my show as well and contact me on the page from bbsradio.com/ETFirstContactRadio. And you can be so kind to do a donation as well, to keep the show running. And my guest is Jeffrey Becker, if you are just coming into the show. And he's a computer programmer, and he wrote a book, Paths to Contact. And we are reviewing the book. It's just great. We are going through the chapters and the experiences of many witnesses. So welcome back, Jeffrey.
Well, thank you. Well, let's see. Let's talk about some of the other people in the book, if that's all right.
Sure. Shoot ahead.
Well, let's see. There's Monica Manny. She's I've actually met her in person out in New York. I went to visit a friend, and she was out there for one of the contact events he put together. And the interesting thing about her story is that she went into a CSETI training with pretty much zero experience in meditation. She was trying to do the exercises in preparation for the event and really feeling like she wasn't getting it. And she'd write to the coordinator and say, you know, I don't know if I should go because, you know, I'm not getting anywhere. And she got to the training, which was at Mount Shasta, and during, I think, both away from the training location and at the training location, she went into meditation, and she had very profound experiences. These were internal experiences, meeting ETs and seeing different sorts of beings, and also meeting ascended masters. So just because you don't meditate or haven't meditated yet doesn't mean great things can't happen if you give it a shot.
Yeah. Yes. And I didn't have time to read that chapter, but can you explain why it's called the Star Child?
You know, I let people pick their own chapter names, and that's the one she wanted to use. So that's one Monica chose. Yeah. And she didn't really tell me why she wanted to be called Star Child, but that's what she wanted.
Well, there's another interesting story about the Star Child skull that was researched by Lord Pai. Have you heard about that story?
I'm not familiar with that one, no.
That was a I have interviewed Amy Vickers, who was working together with Lord Pai. And the Star Child skull was found in Mexico. It seemed to be 900 years old. And they researched the DNA, and it's not human, it's not animal. It's really from the ETs. So that's just association I had with this title. But it's interesting to know.
Mm-hmm.
Because as a journalist on BBS Radio, I interview different people, and the stories are really amazing. And if you want to subscribe to the archives, you can go to bbsradio.com/ET First Contact Radio and subscribe to the archives, and you can download all the past interviews and hear about the story from Patricia Corey, James Gilliland, Sheldon Idle, Mike Quincy, and many others, like yourself, Jeffrey.
Yeah, there's a surprising number of people around that have had contact experience.
Yes, it's amazing.
Once people get hooked into that network, they're going to find out that it's really kind of a big deal, and it's growing rapidly. So another one of the people that contributed to the book was Ricky Butterfast. I've met Ricky. He was at the training I went to in 2008, and also CSETI events in Rio Rico in 2009 or 2010. And so I've met him a number of times and talked to him. And he's a really nice guy. He's been going to contact events since at least maybe 20 years now. And even before then, he was having, even as a child, he had personal experiences with ETs. His family was actually so connected, they called them spacemen. It wasn't really anything unexpected with his family. And so he's had some amazing experiences, and the ones that he talks about in the book are just some that haven't really been in print before. Some of his other experiences in CSETI training, they're in Dr. Greer's book, Contact, Countdown to Transformation.
Yes.
But in his book, he talks about some other things, and actually he worked with MUFON for a while and saw and did some investigations where actually MUFON was trying to cover up what he was trying to investigate, which is kind of peculiar. And it's just if you have a chance to talk to him, you'll find out some amazing things.
Oh, if you can provide me with his contact details, I'll be very happy, Jeffrey.
I can do that.
Yeah, love to have this guy on the show. I've read his chapter, and in fact, he had an amazing career also.
Yeah, and he's really rubbed elbows with a lot of interesting people just through his contact work and other things he's done. And there was actually one sighting that's part of the disclosure project that the FFA investigator Callahan was looking into, and it seems that Ricky had made, he was on a flight at the same time and had made telepathic contact with the ship, and the plane he was on had to make a unscheduled stop because of the goings on related to that event. And so he talks about that a bit in his chapter.
Yes.
Let's see. There's Janet Brooke. She's a retired postal worker. She's a very modest lady, but she's been having amazing experiences basically since birth. One of the first things she described was seeing a star being from her crib, and as a child knowing about grasshopper people and things like that. And she's been to numerous CSETI trainings. She knows a lot about how to go about making contact, and she has ET friends, and her inner sight is very good, so she can see them when they're there, even though they might not be visible to other people. And that's one aspect of this phenomenon that people from a very analytical background might have trouble with, and but it's ubiquitous that that these contacts happen in many, many, many different ways. One of the more common ones being dream time, also in astral, and also in astral, astral out of body, but also in body if your vision allows you to see into the astral when you're awake, then people see them that way. Things like touches, scents, funny sounds. My wife had her chair shaken by, you know, there wasn't anything around it. Somebody just grabbed her chair and gave it a shake, it would seem. In meditation, and then also in the physical, things that can actually be physically recorded. So, and yes, Todd Michael really gets into all these different sorts of contact. It's one of the things he likes to expound upon.
Yeah, evolving the human, that's the chapter.
Right.
Yeah.
And he's another interesting guy because his background is military, even into classified areas, signal intelligence, Air Force, in the Air Force, counterterrorism, all sorts of things. And so he's very aware of how classified information can be kept secret for a long time, and how some of the things that seem to be classified information are leaked out, or in fact disinformation, or are modified in such a way that the source can be detected.
Yeah.
It can be determined. So, and so his chapter is pretty interesting because he covers a lot of areas that other people don't go into. And also, once he learned of the subject and it was in through some of his classified contacts, he learned of this, and he doesn't specify how he learned about it. He doesn't specify what he learned because I don't think he can. But he became interested and started looking into more esoteric subjects, more paranormal subjects, and eventually had a contact where an ET came through a wall and greeted him. And after he got out of the military, he spent some time in Sedona running tours. And he has a couple of his own books out, and he talks about, in this chapter, talks about some of the extraordinary experiences that happened on some of these tours, including physical ships very nearby.
Yeah, he says secret information doesn't mean it's real or the whole truth. The game goes for secret, confidential, for official use only, and various code words or compartmentalized data.
Yeah. So.
And it's highly interesting to have people like him on the show, because their career in classified fields.
Yeah, and just if you want to talk to some of these people, let me know, and I'll try and get them in touch with you and see if they're interested.
In fact, this book, if I may say, Jeffrey, the book that you published with all the stories from the different contactees, it's a collection of people from different backgrounds, as I said in your introduction. Mm-hmm. It's a plethora of interesting stories from all different kinds of people. And it's a very rich source of information. That's what I want to say. It's complete, a very complete book. So I must congratulate you.
Well, thank you. And I had a really good time, a fun time, and I learned a lot myself putting this book together and working with these amazing people and finding out what about their experiences. For me, it was an eye-opener in some ways. I'm really happy for the experience of doing it, and I'm glad other people are finding it to be useful to them. And people that have had some sort of experience and haven't had anybody to talk to, there have been some very nice comments about how much it confirms their experiences. So for people that don't yet have a group of like-minded people, then maybe this will help them feel better about things that have happened to them. One thing I really didn't do on purpose was to seek out the big names in contact, like Dr. Greer. He already has his own books. James Gilliland, he already has his own books. So I didn't really seek them out to contribute to the book. And that was by design. There are a couple of people that are on their way to becoming big names. They're just getting started, really. One is Greg Sullivan. He talks about how he started an organization called JSETI in Japan. And he's still very actively developing that. And Japan is pretty different from the United States because he's getting television coverage and things like that, and they take it rather more seriously. There's not the same sort of flippant attitude about the subject that you get in news stories in the United States.
The same for countries like Mexico with Jaime Maussan.
Yeah. And another thing I didn't do, this is by no means complete coverage of what's going on in contact. There are other groups in other countries that really I just didn't have time, and there isn't space in a book like this to cover absolutely everything. But there's Rama that was started in South America. and probably many groups I'm not even aware of. And I didn't mean to exclude them. It's just that, you know, I had enough to fill a book.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Then another fellow is Martin Ellis, and he's starting, well, actually it's running pretty well right now. It's an organization called SERPR that's in the United Kingdom. And he talks about how he came to found SERPR. And it's really interesting because he started out as a very top-level athlete, a gymnast, in fact, and he was very close to going to the Olympics. And around the time that his Olympic bid kind of fell apart because of an injury, he had a really amazing becoming one with the universe sort of experience, not really having thought it out. He just sort of was going with the flow and was following his intuition, and he met a couple of people and had this amazing experience where he felt he was one with the universe. And that experience and everything that followed guided him into creating a contact organization in the UK. And of course, he has a website for that, and all these links can be found in the resources section of the pathstocontact.org book website.
Mm-hmm. And Jeffrey, if I may ask you, there's another interesting chapter from Alan Costantino,
yes,
if I pronounce it correctly. And one of the summary points that he's adding up, I just want to read from the book. Now in the summer of 2012, after 5 years of intensive experimental learning and practice, I am satisfied that ETs, UFOs, and other dimensions do in fact exist. I consider myself an ambassador to the universe and hold it as a privilege to be able to help others become aware of that. And then there are a few points. And one of the points that I want to emphasize here is number 4. ETs have a long history with humankind and are waiting for us to accept their presence without violence so they can work with us more directly on the physical plane. They want us to help humanity awaken because the timetable for mass contact is imminent. And then, of course, we come back to your dream. And
yeah,
the dream that many people had, including myself. So I think the moment that this happens will be a very joyous occasion for all of us.
I absolutely agree with that. I think it's not going to be that long, but there's a conference I went to in August, and the conference organizer there started his talk saying, "Soon is a four-letter word." And what he meant by that was he gets a lot of telepathic information, and when he asks, "Well, when is this going to happen?" the response is usually "soon." And so it seems that soon to ETs isn't like what we think of as soon. It's not going to be next week or next month or maybe even next year, but in the broader scheme of things, soon could be decades away. So it's really hard to say exactly when these things are going to happen, but I think as long as we're making positive progress, that it absolutely will.
Yeah, it can be tomorrow or after 50 years.
Right, and those would all qualify as soon. To some of us that maybe don't have 50 years left on this planet, we'd like it to be sooner than 50 years.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, after 50 years, you will be remembered for your contribution into bringing out the information with your book, Path to Contact.
Oh, that's a very generous thing to say. Thank you.
Yes, Jeffrey. Are there other witnesses and stories that are in the book that you want to talk about?
Well, I really like all of them because they all have something different and unique to say. There's many different points of view. There are a number of people that are scientists, and Ellen Constantino, who we were just talking about, is one of them. She actually has her background is microbiology. And she's done various healing, and she's worked with dolphins and all these sorts of things. So these are very interesting people, on normal human terms. Then there's another one, Lee Titus, and he's actually a professional meteorologist, and he has a contact group in Newfoundland, and they were out on a very foggy night. It was windy and foggy, and they went into their group meditation, and this hole opened up around them in the fog all the way up to the stars so they could see the stars. And he's a meteorologist, and so he knows very well that this isn't a natural phenomenon. And what he thought was that this was ET technology doing this, opening up this hole in the clouds. And, you know, I can't say one way or the other how this sort of thing happens, but I do know that in many contact groups there are reports of similar experiences, and we've had that in the contact group here where we'd go into meditation on a overcast night and we'd open our eyes and there'd be stars. My own interpretation of how this works is a little different. I tend to think it's nature cooperating for the higher good. Some people think it might be our own energy that does it. And, you know, I honestly don't know, but I just know that these amazing things do happen.
Yeah, it could be a combination of ET forces working together with nature and our own consciousness.
Yeah, absolutely. It's tough to say, and really I think it's okay for us to leave these things undecided until we learn more, and not to create a belief system when we really don't need to have a belief system. And I think it's fine to just take these experiences on board and say, wow, it's really cool. This hole opened up in the clouds when we were meditating, without necessarily explaining it by some mechanism. There are just things that we don't understand yet. And hopefully as we grow and learn, we'll begin to understand them.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, time will tell. And those people that have or have had ET experiences, it is not linked to any reference or, you know, known experience. So, mm-hmm. But it's interesting when I read your book, and also I know from other stories from ET contactees, is that there are many similar things that happen, like you said, the holes in the sky, or dreams that people share, and those are keys, or indeed paths to contact, that make it clear that there is a higher intelligence at work here.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, and it's also amazing how personal it is. Once you start having these sort of connections, it sometimes seems like they know you better than you know yourself. And I'm not the only one that said that. Other people have said this.
No.
In fact, Monica Manny, when she started developing her contact she named the beings she had the most contact with patients. And in fact, she's not the only one that's met an ET being. They decided he needed to be called patients. Whether it's the same ET being or not, I don't know. But Janet Brooke also talks about patients. But mostly what goes on in these contacts on the telepathic level, it's rather personal. It's not something that necessarily needs to be discussed in public. And I've found that to be the case with my experiences too.
Yeah. There's another interesting chapter, A Journey Upward, from Steve Poitras. And I like his article. You should really, if you're listening, order the book, Path to Contact. You can find it on path2contact.org. And Jeffrey Becker has collected all the stories. And coming full circle, after coming full circle and looking back in reflection on the events of the last few years, seeing it all laid out like this gives me a new perspective on what took place. And then he says, 2012 seems to be the year for coming out. Well, it's now 2013. But anyway, my gut feeling tells me, Jeffrey, that things are developing in a very good way. And it's good that we're all working together. And I hope that your book will bring knowledge and consciousness to the people who read it and give them courage to come out with their own story.
I couldn't agree with you more. Steve, when he sent his chapter in, it was he said that he was almost trembling. He was very concerned about what would happen when he went public with this, but he went ahead and did it anyway. And so it's just fantastic that these people have stepped up and were willing to use their real names and talk about these things that a lot of people just aren't quite ready to talk about. Yeah. So I have to thank all of the contributors to the book, because it's just amazing what they've contributed and how the whole thing turned out. I couldn't be happier.
It's truly so, Jeffrey. And so we have to sign off now, because there's a show afterwards, and we have to sign off. But I want to thank you for being on the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
It was very interesting, and we will have a show in the future. Of course, when you have new information to share with us. This is ET First Contact Radio with Maarten Horst. And next week I will be back with a guy from Italy who works for Giorgio Armani, and he has an interesting story to tell, and he has amazing pictures of UFOs. Thank you, Jeffrey, and namaste, and love and light.